All right. It is now time to talk to you. We had a lot of content in the hour number one. Appreciate everybody's patience, but I know you guys want have your voices, then you want them to be heard. 216-578-0850. You can tweet the show at Browns_daily. Nathan Zagura, Vic Carucci here on Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. We're going to go to the phone lines now, and we're going to start with Bruce in New Philadelphia. What's up, Bruce?
Hey, how you doing? Thanks for taking my call.
You got it.
I'll see what I have to say, and then I'll hang up and listen. I guess if the rule of thumb usually on draft day is to take the best player on the board, not necessarily for need, but for a best player, then my question is, if this regime that's in here now would have been at the table last year, and would they have gone all out to try to get RG3, or knowing that Trent Richardson and Claiborne were kind of 3-4-ish, if the rule of thumb is to take the best player on the board, yeah. how can you really blame the regime from last year for taking Trent Richardson and then all of a sudden, you know, get rid of him? I guess what makes me upset is the point that we just completely, totally blew our number one draft pick.
Yeah, we hear you, and I hear your point, and it's well framed as far as the best player on the board and how he was rated. Unequivocally, what I was told before this season, and I heard it from any number of people, and you know, I heard it in this building, but others who are not here in the building but cover the team heard the same thing. This group running the Browns right now would never have made that choice that high for a running back. It was against their basic principle to do that, and I heard others react that way. He was regarded as a top five prospect. I heard Mel Kiper say that. I mean, for whatever it's worth, having, you know, the draft analyst say that. I've heard people from NFL teams talk about that talent that way, but stopping short of saying you don't take a running back in that top five area. It's the position versus, it's not so much the guy as it is the position and the talent. That's a very big overspend of a pick for a running back for the production in a league that doesn't put the same value on running backs as it once did. And that was understood, I think, when that made. That's what made it somewhat of a controversial choice that people thought the Browns overdrafted.
The only thing that's interesting to me about this, and I think that maybe the league has even changed more by this year than it did last year, and this is an article that Mike Lombardi wrote on NFL.com April 23rd, 2002. And it says, 10 things I believe to be true in this week's draft. Number one, this is number one. I believe the safest pick in this draft beyond Andrew Luck and RG3 is Alabama running back Trent Richardson. He's a blue-chip player and has all the skills to quickly establish himself as a top-five player at his position. Forget the nonsense about not taking backs early. Everyone would love the chance to get this guy. So
How early was he talking, though? Was he talking top five? Was he talking? He said top five running back, but was he talking top five in the draft?
I think he was
early, maybe first round.
He said, I believe the safest pick in this draft beyond Andrew Luck and RG3 is Trent Richardson.
How early is early? I just wish, you know.
I don't know.
I mean, that, because
sounds to me like he's saying he would take him number
right
third
in that spot. Or four or whatever. Yeah. The Browns were originally fourth and then traded up from there. No, it's interesting.
It's interesting. And it shows how times change.
And I heard Bill Polian say this, among others, too, that liked the talent that he had. But every draft is different. How you rank players based on, you know, what the draft has to offer in relative abilities and so forth. Let's clear up another thing regarding how the Browns approached this last draft. They originally wanted RG3. They tried to make the trade that St. Louis would not make with the Browns, that St. Louis did make with the Redskins. There were some connections there. There is no doubt there were some connections there. Marvin Demoff, who is an agent, his son, who represents Jeff Fisher, his son is part of the Rams front office, and he has represents Mike Shanahan and had the connection with Shanahan and the Redskins front office, and behind the scenes, that had some things, you know, going on to it.
Sure.
Whatever the Browns were or weren't going to offer, the position that Mike Holmgren said, and he said this to me and said this to other people, no matter what we would have put up there, we were never going to beat out the Redskins for this trade. Okay, and if that's true, then what did they do? And I think maybe some panic set in. I think there was a sense that they even, to go from 4 to 3 was like, we're not going to screw this up. We've got to get there to get this guy, or else it's already a bad thing that we didn't get RG3. It would become disastrous if we didn't get this guy in the mind of the mindset.
And how interesting was it, though, that they went from 4 to 3 with Minnesota, who had Adrian Peterson. So, I mean, what were the chances really that Minnesota was going to draft Trent Richardson?
Right. I think it was worried that they were going to trade.
Minnesota was going to trade out of it to somebody else.
Clearly,
they wanted to
get the spot. Yeah. They made the trade with many because they thought Minnesota was going to trade to somebody else. And there were definite connections between Rick Spielman and the leaders here at the time, Tom Heckert and others, who were kind of in the same, you know, same circles.
I think, and it's also clear that whether or not this is what his opinion was at that time, I think that if Mike Lombardi, Joe Banner were here last year, Trent Richardson would not have been the draft pick. And I think that is totally clear based on the actions that took place yesterday.
And if Mike Lombardi still feels that way, the primary shot caller for this team is Joe Banner. I mean, I think he'd respect and hear what he had to say about things. I don't know that they necessarily are always on the, you know, in agreement on every single thing. I've not been around a team, and I've been around NFL teams a long time, where the closest of relationships, I'll talk about the Bills because I spent the most time around them, Bill Polian as general manager, Marv Levy, the Hall of Fame head coach, they had their disagreements, but eventually would talk their way to a spot of agreement and have that mutual sense. And I get the sense here they try to reach a point of consensus.
Sure.
You heard Joe Banner's reference to the group here making decisions, and that is how it works. And multiple people have those have voices in those conversations. But that all said, I think when you break it all down, it's not the pick, it's not the place that you would. I had trepidation over where he was picked, but I said this, as I said earlier on the roundtable. All I said was, then he's going to be amazing. We're going to be in awe in every game. And
there's only a couple of guys like that in the NFL. I think Adrian Peterson and LeSean McCoy really are maybe the only two running backs that are like that, that you're in awe of every game. And by the way, LeSean McCoy last year was on very much a losing football team.
Jerry on a cell. Hey, Jer. Jerry on a cell with us once, twice.
Hey, what's up, Jerry?
What do you got?
You know, I'm a longtime season ticket holder, and, you know, since before 99. And just since 99, I probably spent more than $40,000 going to games. I am so upset by this. I understand what they're doing. But, you know, we were told that they were going to get better this year. You know, we were going to have a better team. We're going to see all this. Now we're going into the rest of the season with a third-string quarterback, no running back, questionable receivers, a decent defense. I mean, what? I'm ready to sell off the rest of my tickets for the rest of the year and try to regroup something from it. I mean, and there's a lot of guys that sit in my section that have been there a long time that feel the same way. I mean, you know, there's going to be more visiting team fans in the stadium come later in the season than there are Browns fans. I mean, it's just, it's incredible that, you know, what are they going to do for us? You know, we've supported them all these years, and I realize Banner's new to it, but they should do something for the fans.
I think that the point you make is valid, and I understand your frustration, and I would feel the exact same way. And I think it is a very tough thing to do to sit here and listen.
And ask him to be. To still be patient and trust that everything's going to get better next year.
It's a hard sell. And we're not trying to sell that to you.
Nope.
I'm giving you my opinions on from a football standpoint, why I think what they did what they did and why I agree from a football standpoint. But from a human standpoint, I get it. It's brutal.
I hate that this happened. I mean,
I agree. I did not want to come here and talk about this.
Right. Not just because it's not. Let me explain what I mean, though. I hate that it happened because this team's in a position that it has to do a very desperate thing here. This is desperation.
It still is after 1999.
The Colts were desperate in giving up a number one pick for a running back because they had no one at that position, and they think that that piece is the difference between them going the distance and not. But so that's an act of desperation, giving up a first rounder for a running back two games into a season and 17 games into this back's career that has not been stellar. Okay, the Browns, though, that's beyond desperate to make that move with the idea that you're looking at yourself and feeling that you're so bad as a team that the only way you can get good is to do something this dramatic, knowing that something like this is going to have this kind of backlash and feedback. I hate this.
I agree.
I hate that this team's in this position.
But
for me, it's 9 wins in 2 years just being part of it with this show and in this role, and we're 0-2 in year number 3 of this show.
It's not going to go much higher than 9.
I hope it's not the show's fault.
In 3 years, I don't think it's the show's fault at all. But I think the point that Jerry made is valid. I know that there are a lot of people that I'm personally friends with who are season ticket holders who are not happy because it's just a tough pill to swallow for this season. And they can. I know that, Joe, you asked him directly, and kudos to you for saying, are you tanking the season?
He didn't like that. He gave me a little bit of a look, but he says, no, you know, but that's the question. Everybody wants to know, are you tanking it? You know,
and at some point you have to ask yourself as a Browns fan, do you want them to just tank it at this point? Do you want them to just go 0-16 and say, let's get the first pick of the first round, the first pick of the second round, the first pick of the third round, have another first round pick?
Yeah, but Nathan, there's a lot of games to watch. I don't want to.
I know. I agree.
Please don't even say that because I'm thinking we've got a lot of time and investment.
Are you kidding?
I'm with this team home and away. I'm heading to Minnesota this weekend. I'm with them home and away. Every practice, every game, every preseason game, every offseason workout.
It is frustrating because, listen,
I don't want to see bad.
I was the guy with the pom-poms 4 weeks ago saying this team could go 8-8. This team is going to be able to play meaningful games in December.
I don't see those pom-poms anymore in the studio.
I don't think that there's a chance they're going to play meaningful games in December.
There's just handles of pom-poms. Nick in Pittsburgh is with us now. Hey, Nick.
Hey, guys. How are you doing?
Good. Kind of.
Yeah. It's hard to even discuss, like, where to begin with. Like, the tanking of the team, I feel like that's exactly what they're doing. From day one, Jimmy Haslam got in here. He told us he wanted to win, not rebuild again for another 5, 6, 7 years it's going to take to get the team. Like, I understand the draft picks for running back. Like, I love the first-round pick. But in the long run, like, we're going with third-string quarterback. It's just like, where's our offense at, too? Like, we're promised it's attacking offense. I didn't see any of an attacking offense at all in the first two games.
Yeah, and I'm bummed out. I really felt, and I may have been in the minority in this room, but I really felt that the opportunity, whether Brandon Whedon wasn't the greatest quarterback I've ever seen, not a top 20 quarterback in the NFL to me, but I thought this offense had the potential to be very exciting with Brandon Whedon, Josh Gordon, and Trent Richardson all on the field, along with Jordan Cameron, who, by the way, has been as good, if not better, than we advertised, and I think we hyped him up pretty big coming into the season.
Yeah.
And we're never going to get to see that, and that, to me, is unfortunate. We're never going to get to see Whedon, Richardson, and Gordon on the field together, and the offense this year is not going to be very good. I don't know. How could it be that good? I mean, how could it just?
I mean,
it can't be.
If it is, wow. You know, then there'll be a very special story to tell about.
They'll make a movie about Brian Hoyer.
It'll be the Brian Hoyer story because it'll be a remarkable. And you know what? Who could not root for that kid to do that and root for that situation? Hometown guy starting. That's his dream. Hey, he's got that dream. You look in his eyes. He's ready. He's ready for Sunday. All this turmoil going on around him. That would be one guy who I would say is feeling the best in this building. Not that he's happy that Trent's gone, and necessarily you don't start doing a dance because someone else got hurt, but the reality of the game is his opportunity resulted from Brandon Whedon's injured thumb and resulted from him showing more than Jason Campbell, who had the more advantageous position as a number two. I think that's a sad thing that this week this is now getting lost, but the Brian Hoyer potential story is a fun one to just hope for. And I know it's probably a pipe dream that what he could do, but I'm sitting here saying, hey, all right, if the coaches can actually see that, identify that in him, then, you know, more power to him. Gerard Cherry is going to come up with us in a little bit in this hour. And Mark Craig, by the way, who covers the Vikings. We are going to talk a little bit. We got to get a couple of Vikings takes here.
The thing I think that
for the Minneapolis Star Tribune,
what he hit on just then, saying where's the offense?
Yeah.
The NFL is turning into what I would call like a machine gun league with these offenses and the weapons, and the Browns now, a lot of people feel giving up Trent Richardson, Whedon's out, they're bringing a water gun to those fights, and that's a problem.
Well, yeah, that fair point. Fair point. They are trying to get their machine. See, I think machine gun, I think of quarterback. And the hope and prospect that that guy's not here is what's driving the rest of it. That the other
no question
that the running back's the ammunition if you've got the other things in place. To take this analogy to a further point. All right, stick around for more. It's Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. Nothing going on around here. Just a little Browns talk. Honestly.